Speaker Gary.
Good morning, family. My name is Gary, and I'm an addict. And it's by God's grace and His divine mercy that I stand before you, clean and recovering, because I know the difference today between being clean and recovering. My clean date is April 18, 1990. My home group is the 818 Miracle Group of Narcotics Anonymous. That's right. I have a sponsor. His name is Mike P.
Yeah.
I'm in service. I go to meetings. I pray. I try to help somebody with no strings attached. I pray. I stay in service, and I try to help another suffering person. I've learned today over my years of recovering, it's not just a suffering addict. I need to extend myself to people all over the world. And I've had plenty of opportunity to do so, some of which I balked at. I'm a guy who will see a suffering person asking for change on the street, and I'll turn my head. I will. But the God of my understanding oftentimes reminds me, but by my grace. So the next time I see a person with a cup asking for some change, I give them some money. Because I need to be reminded, that I am not all there. I'm an addict. I'm an only child. I was raised by my mom in the 1960s at 12th and T Street Northwest. A lot of action was going on 12th and T Street. I was a little guy who had to wear men's sport coats for outer winter coat. That's how poor we was. My mother worked day work for folk that lived in big exclusive houses way out out of Maryland. She had to catch 3 buses and walk 3 miles to earn $6 a day. We lived in a rooming house where we had 1 room, and then we were elevated to 2 rooms where we had to share bathroom and kitchen with 12 other using addicts and drunks. Oftentimes, I would go to my bathroom in the middle of the night and find somebody slumped over the toilet, either dead or OD, or in the tub with blood running down their arm. And I always told myself I would never become that. I would never become that. I found joy in smoking weed. My first drug of choice was weed. It changed my mood. It got me outside of being that scared little boy who always ran. I was a runner. Now, if you cornered me, we rumbled. But if I could get away, I was gone. Because I had no older brothers or sisters. And either you had to fight or you ran. And most of the time, I ran. But there came a point in my life where I had to stand up for myself. And I had a brother that I was in high school with, in junior high school with, and he and I were in grade school. And he told me, he said, if you run one more time, I'm going to beat your ass. I ain't run no more. Because he's a big guy. You know, there's a guy in here that taught me how to shoot spitballs in the back of people's heads. I ain't going to reveal him. I ain't going to tell his name. And I ain't going to point to him. But he's my sandbox buddy. We were in fourth grade together. And we're real, real close today. I thank God for you being in my life. I give honor to the God of my understanding, my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, that I discovered in the third step, that I serve diligently, and I honor him by the way that I live. And I want to give honor.
Yeah.
That's my queen. That's my queen. I'm her big daddy. This program will do for you what you cannot do for yourself. If you follow some simple guidelines, I have also to give honor to some men who helped to raise me in this process. My peer group, they helped me to become a man, and I have not arrived. I have some guys, we meet every other Thursday, and we talk about everything and anything. We undress, and we can go in scripture, we can go in the 12 steps, we can go anywhere we want to go, but we're able to heal through that process. And I enjoy them, some of whom I've grown up with, some I've just learned to know and become friends with, and we're real, real close. I have another group of guys that we meet every Tuesday at my church at 7:30 at the Temple of Praise, and we talk through the 12 steps of this program through the work of Scripture, through our the God of our understanding. It is so very inspirational in my life, you know, that it has helped to change me. And I am so ever so grateful for those guys being in my life and being powers of examples. I'm a guy who, when I first got clean, I was so fearful of using again. I had a spiritual bottom, and it was something so different having to have had that kind of pain. I played a lot of sports when I was a kid, and I was a accident prone. I broke my ankle, broke my dislocated this arm, jumping out of a tree. I got hit by a car. I fell in a hole playing throw up tackle and broke my ankle. I got beat up by a group of grown men who tried to rape my little 13-year-old girlfriend. I've been through a lot of pain, and the healing process from that, it helped me to grow. It really, really did. And it was before I even knew that I had to heal in such a way that I have to heal today. And it helped me because I got an opportunity to see the process it took me to get through. Because when you're healing, you want to be healed right away. You don't want to go through the process. You know what I'm saying? And you know, the same way that, you know, you get hurt and then now you got to recuperate. You know, I've had knee surgery. I broke my kneecap. You know, when I was 20 years old, and I had a cast from my hip to my ankle, you know what I mean? And they had the first deaf concert over at RFK Stadium, and, you know, Mandrill and Funkadelic and, you know, War, you know, everybody was there, and I was on my front with a cast from my ankle to my thigh, you know what I mean? And my buddies came over and said, man, we'll carry you to the concert. I said, no, you won't. Not with this pain, you know what I'm saying? Because every time I flinched my leg, I could feel a pain go up the back of my neck to my brain. And I said, you won't carry me anywhere. But what they did was they medicated me. They gave me PCP. They gave me some Mr. Natural. They gave me some liquor. We drank a 40. And I said, I'll see y'all later. And they went all to the concert, man. You know what I'm saying? And I wanted to go, but I knew that I had to heal. You know what I'm saying? It was a healing process for me. I got married some years ago. Excuse me, some years ago, and I got married because I my self-esteem was so low. You know what I'm saying? I married a woman who was beautiful. You know what I'm saying? She had came from a good family background, and mother and father in the family, and they were family oriented, and you know, I said, man, this is the place for me. But what I found out was that I really didn't want that. I really didn't know what I wanted, but my self-esteem told me that if you don't get her now, you are never going to get another woman of that stature. And I married her, and she got pregnant the same year. 6 months later, she stuck out like that, and I'm like, man, I don't really want to do this. You know, and in my mind, I was going, I need to send her home. You know what I'm saying? Go back to my mama's house, go in my room, and I can continue to get high. But she messed up my get high money. You know what I'm saying? And I wasn't ready for that kind of responsibility. But Francis, what I told myself was, if I got married, I would become more responsible. An irresponsible person, telling himself that. So, I continued to use as a direct result of what was going on in my mind and how I felt. And eventually, man, it got to a point where I just couldn't take it no more. And I became the coward that I was building myself up to become. And I snuck into my apartment and I took my little stereo and a TV and I barged into my mama's house and said, Mom, I don't know what's up with that woman, man, but I can't deal with her no more. I'm coming back home. And I never once told my wife then, you know, how I felt, what I was going through. And neither did I tell my two children that I left behind. I just abandoned them. And I didn't know, had no idea of the effect that would have on other people. And I thought it was all right. Because all I knew now is I can get high. All I got to do is give Mom a couple of hours a month. And I was cool. Because I was a working addict. And if I didn't go to work, I couldn't get high. Because I ain't no bank robber. I don't jump over no counters. I ain't no rustler. I ain't no bad boy. None of that. I'm a petty, crack-smoking thief. That's what I am. You know what I'm saying? And I understood that when I got here. After I did my fourth step, I was able to see the patterns and the confusion, the distortion of my life through that process, man. And so now I know. You know what I mean? I have got to stand upright. I got to stand upright. Can you say I got to speak up? I got to stand upright, you know what I mean, and do the right thing. And you guys are teaching me how to do that. I am so grateful, man, that recovery was available for me when it was. I was a hopeless guy. I had no hope, you know what I mean? I used to the idea of what I should have been, what I could have been. You know what I mean? I'm the only child, and all I did in my younger years was to fantasize. So I would fantasize about the stuff that I should have done, and I used to that. You know, so today I combat that, and I think about the good things that I can do for other people around me. Right now, I've joined a situation where now I can help some younger at-risk youth. You know what I'm saying? I can counsel them and guide them. You know, be of some positive force in their lives. And I know the importance of having that to have happen in my life, because I had that at some point in my early years of life, that I had some men who were godly men who tutored me and they mentored me and they guided me and they kept me from shooting dope. Because all of my friends at that time started to shoot dope at 13 and 14 years old. And I was right next to them smoking weed and drinking wine in the shooting gallery. On 12th and T Street, you know, and then one of my friends told me, said, man, you don't belong here. You need to leave. You need to get out of here. And I took that and I ran with it because I didn't want to shoot no dope, because all my cousins shot dope all their lives. And I saw the abscesses and the pus running out of them and, you know what I mean, blood running and blood-stained shirts. And I ain't want to be like that. But what I found was that when I continued to use and as I got older, the scars that I had were internal, you know, and they were such that when I got to the point where I couldn't stand it anymore, I decided that I needed to change. And I sought my sponsor, and he helped me, you know, to identify, you know, how powerless I was, not only over drugs, but over the disease of addiction. And I had to recognize what the disease of addiction was. And you know what I found out is that in doing some work with him, we went back to my childhood and it came back to my memory that I was addicted to, some of you all might know, squirrel nuts. Two-foot penny squirrel nuts. I like the coconut, the green package. Yeah, I was on them. And I would take Miss Lena's trash out and go to the corner store on 11th and U and buy a dollar's worth of 2 4-penny candy. So that was a bag like this. I was 8 years old. I would sneak to Garrison Playground and eat all of the candy. I'd hide because, you know, playground, everybody was there. You know what I'm saying? So I'd go in a little corner, I'd hide, eat all the candy, get sick, you know, poop on myself, throw up and all that other stuff, run home to my mother, "Mom, my stomach hurt." She said, "Boy, what you had?" "I don't know." And the very next day, I would do the same thing. And I would do that over and over and over again. And I found that out in my fourth step. You know what I'm saying? So now, you know, some years later, my sweetheart and I, we weren't just engaged yet, but we were living together. And I was, you shop to your feelings. And you know, I was on jeans then. You know, every new fashion jean style, you name it, I had to have it. If I saw you with it, I'd ease. "Where you get that from, man?" You know, I had a friend of mine who used to take me to Potomac Mills, and I tell you how obsessive and compulsive I am. I saw a pair of jeans, and I'd never seen them before. Never seen none of y'all wearing them, because I'm watching. See who got the latest fashion on, because y'all too fly. You know what I'm saying? And I saw a pair of jeans I hadn't seen anybody with, and I couldn't get it out of my mind. Now, I wasn't driving. I'm talking about Potomac Mills. In Virginia, and in Woodbridge, Virginia, and I lived in D.C., and I had that thing on my mind so heavy I couldn't sleep, and I asked that person to take me back to Potomac Mills to get those jeans. Now, by then, I had collected in the top part of my closet, there were jeans that had tags on them. I had never even worn. And my beautiful wife, she's so beautiful. She says, "Sweetheart, what's going on with you?" So, you know, I'm in denial, you know. "What are you talking about? Tags hanging, price tags, size tags, you know, the whole top, I mean, this deep, brand new." You know what I'm saying? I said, "Oh, shit, ain't nothing, you know. I owe myself." You know what I mean? You know. So some kind of way it got to my sponsor. He said, my first sponsor, he talked real slow. He said, "Man, don't you know that's the disease of addiction? Are you tripping?" I said, "No, man, I'm just buying stuff, you know. I got a little money." He said, "Well, do something else with your money." I said, "Okay, man." So, but, you know, the healing process for me also is that, you know, today I've like I said, I share with some young guys, and I have a six-year-old grandson, and he was born a preemie. He was 2 pounds and 1/4 ounce when he was born. I could put him in my hand, and at the time that he was born, I was healing from my diabetes had risen to a point of neuropathy, and with neuropathy you lose your equilibrium. You know, your sight is dim. My reaction time was 30% slower. You know, you're overwhelmed with large areas. I couldn't come out of my house because I felt overwhelmed, and I wouldn't. I would go to the doctor. I would go be deliberate and go to the doctor and come back. And if I went in the grocery store and if I was shopping and I saw an item and I scanned the shelf to see another item, by the time I got to that item, what I just saw would register. That's how slow my reaction time was. And my doctor kept telling me, "Dude, if you bring your weight down and you take this medication as prescribed, that'll go away." And so, you know, with the urging of my sweetheart, you know, we got through that. And also I had dropped into a depression, you know, and didn't realize it. And I wouldn't go out the house unless I had to. I wouldn't go to any meetings. I wouldn't go to church. I wasn't really talking to folk on the phone. I wasn't sharing where I was. So I was in seclusion. And so my wife said, "That's enough. You're going out of here."
That's right.
So she took me to church, and Bishop prayed and laid hands on me. And I went to a meeting, and I heard a sister share about depression. Family depression is real. It's a real issue. And it will creep up on you like a thief in the night. And before you know it, you are caught in its web of deception. So be very, very careful. And that's why it's important for me to pay very close attention to me. And in my healing process, I've got to take my prescription as prescribed in its entirety. And that means that I've got to come in here. I've got to share with you guys openly and honestly. I've got to give back. I got to be in service. I could be attentive. I got to be able to help the newcomer. These are the things that help me to heal from the inside out. Y'all told me it's an inside job a long time ago. And I've got to heal from the inside. I got some wounds in there that probably still got some scar tissue on. You know what I'm saying? And I've got to be able to heal from that kind of stuff. Because if I don't, I'm going to behave on it. I'll behave on my pain. You know what I'm saying? And I shared with my daughter, my youngest daughter, who was so much like, she's my twin. God bless her heart. And so I shared with her about having to have spent our inheritance. My mother saved up over $190,000, you know what I'm saying, as an inheritance for me and my daughters. And I was kind of, you know, matter-of-factly told her one day, man, you know, man, I used and I spent up all our inheritance. Before I knew it, I said it and didn't really realize, and it got quiet. And I said, you all right? She said, hell no, I ain't all right. All the hell we was going through back then, and you ain't shared none of that with us? Man, I felt lower than a footprint, man. You know what I'm saying? So I had to heal from that. You know, she had to heal from that. You know what I'm saying? And you know, we still bat heads day to day, time to time. And but what I found is that when I practice these principles in everything I do today, my life gets so much better, you know, and you know, I try to reach out to my family and especially my daughters and my son and trying to share with them, you know, the kinds of things we go through in here y'all don't have to go through, you know what I'm saying? And I have to share with them, you know what I mean, the kinds of things that will help them to grow and prosper and be in posture to be elevated, you know what I'm saying? Because that's what I want for my family. Now, if I can't do that for my family, how am I going to be of any service to folk outside my family? Because charity begins at home. You know what I'm saying? And so, but I want to say to you guys, man, is that healing today for me is monumental. You know what I mean? Because I still have got a lot of work to do on me. And I know at any time, man, you know, I might flip out according to how I feel and what I'm thinking. If I'm not spiritually grounded, that's why it's important for me to read, you know, to study the scripture, study the works and how it works and why, the basic text. I need to study that kind of stuff so I can get it inside of me. So when those situations come up in my life, that I'll be able to respond to that kind of stuff positively, because I still feel kind of good cuss people out every now and then.
Yeah.
It does, but I know it causes harm.
Yeah.
And folk, you know, when you say stuff, it's like a blade, man, and you can't pull that stuff back. You know what I mean? Once you cut somebody, you know what I'm saying. So that means that they got to heal, and then you got to heal, because I've got to forgive myself for being able to put myself in a position to do that. So it's important for me to try to do those kinds of things, prevent myself. The 10th step talks about us having to be able to look at ourselves first. You know what I mean? It's not so much as, you know, me looking at you. I got to look at me, because I got to be able to repair the stuff that I do on a daily basis so that I won't have to go back. You know, put you on my 8-step list, then crawl up around you and make an amends. So it's important for me to stay in today, you know, live for today, and do what's right today, because that's all I got is today. You know, I want to thank the selection committee, my brother Kenneth. I want to thank you, man, for asking me to come, and I'm going to keep coming back.